Fullness of joy. In your presence there is fullness of joy. Psalm 16:11. For you make him a source of blessing forever. You make him glad with the joy of your presence. Psalm 21:6. Your words were found and I ate them, and your words became a joy and the delight of my heart. For I am called by your name, O Yahweh, Lord of hosts. Jeremiah 15:16. For most of my life, joy has escaped me. It has eluded me because, like most, I was looking for an emotion, a feeling that I could associate with that of mirth, gaiety, happiness, or pleasure, which indeed is the very definition Strong's gives to the Hebrew word simcha, translated as the English joy, in the verse from Psalm 16 above. But as we have been seeing in recent articles, Hebrew words often carry a spectrum of meanings depending on the context they are used in. Words mean things. The way to properly understand Scripture is context, context, context. We must always consider the context the Scriptures are presented in, the context of the Hebrew perspective they are presented from, and the context of the Hebrew words the way the Hebrew audience they were spoken to would understand them. By observing the words we are given in this manner, allow Scripture to interpret Scripture instead of allowing them to be reduced into the theological tradition of men. Thus, we find the joy spoken of in both the original and messianic writings to be something much more expansive than simply an emotional giddiness. For the joy of Yahweh is your strength. Nehemiah 8:10. In this often quoted verse, we find a different Hebrew word, chedva, also translated as the English joy. This rare word is only used twice in all of Scripture to denote a direct connection to Yahweh. Here and in 1 Chronicles 16:27. Which says strength and joy, gladness, are in his place. While simcha is clearly associated with human emotions and actions, chedva seems to be the exclusive possession of Yahweh himself. This makes chedva all the more important. If chedvat Yahweh is our strength, then we should know what it means. So then, just what is the joy of Yahweh? What can it mean to suggest that the Father himself experiences joy and that this is the basis of our strength? The text doesn't offer much help since the word occurs only twice. We will have to look deeper. The Paleo-Hebrew pictograph provides a clue. Paleo-Hebrew takes us back to the original pictorial underpinnings from where the language originates. Chedva is a noun derived from the verb chara. The consonants are chet, dalet, he. The chet is shown as a wall or a fence. The dalet is shown as a door. This is an interesting character because in ancient Hebrew culture, to pass through a doorway was an act of coming into covenant with the leader of the home. So not only does dalet represent a way in, but it is also considered a way into covenant with someone. Together, the picture they present is, behold, a door in the fence. Now we can see what the joy of Yahweh is. It is the gladness of providing a door in the fence to enter into covenant with Him, a path for coming into His presence. What cheers Yahweh? A way to partake of His divine nature. Yahweh rejoices that there is a door for us to come into fellowship with Him. We are not shut out, for He has provided a way in. The joy of Yahweh is that He is able to fellowship with us. It is helpful to notice that the context of the entire chapter of Nehemiah 8 is the proclamation of keeping Yahweh's words, His instructions given to His family. It is through the keeping of His covenant found in His words that we are able to enter into fellowship with Him and experience His joy. Did you notice that none of this joy requires our efforts? The Chevat Yahweh exists because He made a way. Enter into the joy of your master in Matthew 25:21 is connected to the joy of Yahweh. So now we see that the deepest sense of joy is not about what we do in glee, but is about the gift Yahweh gives, an open door. The privilege to enter into harmony with Yahweh is our strength. No other creature in all creation has this privilege. There is no other door except the one He provides. This should make our hearts leap with gratitude and rejoicing. Our strength is His provision. By this my Father is glorified that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in His love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. John 15:8-11. In John 17:20-23, Yeshua prays to His Father Yahweh that we become Echad, which is Hebrew for one or unity, with Spirit, just as, in similar fashion, in like manner as He is Echad with Spirit, that my joy might abide in them and that their joy might be full. Yeshua was drawing on the imagery found in the opening verses of this article. He knew where His joy was to be found, in the nature of Spirit found in the words of His Father. By being obedient to His Father's words, He became Echad with His Father, and His resurrection opened the way for us to become Echad as well. The Hebrew letters Aleph, Chet, Dalet are what make up the Hebrew word Echad. In Paleo Hebrew, the Hebrew letter Aleph is shown as the head of an ox, and as we saw with Chedva, Chet Dalet is a door in the fence to enter into covenant with Him. Aleph represents a fullness of strength and power. So when this word Echad was originally used, it would have been defined as the strength of someone coming into covenant. Where did Yeshua find His joy? He found it in the keeping of His Father's commandments, for they are what caused Him to abide in the presence of His Father where there is fullness of joy. He goes on to say the glory given to Him by Yahweh is also given to us. In John 15:8-11, we are told the means by which to acquire that glory is the same means Yeshua acquired it. To abide, to make our residence in the nature of Spirit as defined by the words of the Father. It is in the keeping of those words that we come into Yahweh's presence, becoming one with Him and thereby finding the strength of His joy in us. Whether Yahweh summarizes holiness in a single command as with Adam, in the constitution of a nation as with Moses, or in the expression of His life as exampled by Yeshua, the requirement for abiding in His presence has always been the same: obedience to His words. If you obey my voice, and if you will attend to my instructions by following them, then will you be my holy people, and then will you abide in the presence of the Eternal One, the source of life. Exodus 19:5 through 6 and Matthew 19:16 through 19. When Moses asked Yahweh to show me your glory in Exodus 33:18 through 19, the next chapter shows Yahweh answering that request by proclaiming the name. The name of Yahweh is found manifested in His nature. So when Yeshua said He manifested Yahweh's name in John 17:6, the characteristics He was speaking of can be found in Exodus 34:5-7. If you look at the wording used in describing His name, His glory, in that passage from Exodus, you find them tantalizingly similar to those found listed in Galatians 5:22-23 and described as the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, and self-control. These are the nature of Spirit, and collectively there is only one fruit. Too often, however, because we find ourselves familiar with feelings associated with the first three, we tend to confuse all of these attributes with feelings. While the first three do have some associative feeling most of us can relate to, if you look at the rest, there's no feeling or emotion that can be associated with them whatsoever. No one has ever felt long-suffering, for instance. Long-suffering, or patience, is something you do, not something you feel. You suffer or endure something for a long time. Faithfulness is just that: being faithful in the middle of adverse circumstances that would strain the credibility of His goodness. Self-control is something you just exercise. So if we look at the first three in the same light as the others, it is easy to appreciate that love, joy, and peace are just as much do actions as the rest. We see that these all are just choices we make in the middle of whatever circumstances are presented us. Now, if some feelings arise because of the actions we have chosen to take, well, that is a wonderful side benefit. But if we are motivated simply by feeling alone, we are apt to fall into deception. As mentioned above, the Hebrew simcha is the word most often translated joy. But that doesn't mean it is what we think joy is. You see, the Hebrew idea of joy is not an abstract concept floating around in a world of ideas. Almost always, simcha is expressed in concrete actions, not in theoretical definitions. This type of joy is the resultant experience shown in frisking about, clapping, dancing, or shouting, experiencing the rewards of patience, finding peace doing justice, or producing righteousness. In other words, in Hebrew thought, joy does not exist independently of the experiences that bring about the feelings of joy. Joy can't be defined as something in addition to the experience. It is the experience. Joy is attached to the act, not separate from it. It's disconcerting to see that the Greek world even attempts to understand joy apart from the intensity of life. So do life. Do it with all the energy you can muster. Do it deliberately and feel life flowing through you. We rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance. Romans 5:3. This is how we are able to do joy in the middle of unjoyful circumstances. We rejoice as an exercise, a manifestation of our trust in the goodness of who Yahweh says He is. You do joy by rejoicing as a proclamation of the truth of His presence in the midst of the circumstances surrounding you, regardless of what they may look like. Here, we are not motivated by feelings, because at this point, our feelings might look pretty dim. As we exercise our trust in Yahweh by the choice of our actions in the middle of the circumstance, we do life, because that is who He is. This is how those of the faith can rejoice in their tribulations, because they know that their witness to the truth and grace of Yahweh found in the manifestation of His name in their midst will bring redemption and restoration to those who observe the truth of their life. The joy is in the message, not in the audience. It is in the message that contains the power of resurrected living. It is the message that conveys the faithfulness of Yahweh. It is the message that answers the pleas of the desperate and is fulfilled when the message is delivered. It doesn't matter what personal effects result. Rejoicing comes as the act of trusting that message, regardless of circumstances. Paul is celebrating the good news that the kingdom has come, rejoicing in our hope of glory. And to glory in our tribulation is to manifest His name in this earthly realm. Too often, we read the apostles as if they are dispensing spiritual aphrodisiacs. We think that their intention is to relieve us of our guilt and make us feel accepted, washed, and renewed. That version of the good news is myopic at best and heresy at worst. It just happens to be preached around the world because it appeals to a religious population of the self-preoccupied, because it makes them feel good. But that is not the gospel of Scripture. The good news of the gospel is not that you and I will feel better because the Messiah suffered. The good news is that Yahweh is faithful, and after centuries of waiting, He has not reneged on His promise. His kingdom has been restored on earth, right now, today, in the midst of His people. The guarantee is found in the Messiah. The apostles rejoice because the real joy is for all those who are already embracing the King's commandments. If you join this band of brothers and sisters, you too will discover the kingdom of heaven right here on earth. That is the true good news. You and I may suffer because of this good news. We may be rejected, scorned, misunderstood, persecuted, and even killed. But it is still good news, and it is still worth rejoicing over. What happens to those who follow matters not. No trials or tribulations will diminish one iota the glorious message now cast as the cornerstone. Nothing can defeat it again, since death itself has been overcome. And that is really something to rejoice over, to shout about. The meek shall obtain fresh joy in Yahweh, and the poor among mankind shall exalt in the Holy One of Israel. Isaiah 29:13. 19.